Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Brodish. She is Marjorie Egan. Joining us in Studio 3 is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. She would be Martha Coakley. Attorney General, it's good to see you.
Until January 21st or so.
You last? It's that long?
Yeah. For some reason, the AG gets sworn in about 2 weeks after the governor.
Are you at least happy that your protege, for lack of a better expression, the new Attorney General, kicked Charlie Baker's behind in basketball? Were you happy about that?
Ecstatic.
Yeah, she's a hot ticket. Little 5'4", Maura Healy.
She's a point guard.
6'6",
Charlie
Baker.
Do not ever underestimate her. She's great, and she'll do a great job. So I'm excited about the fact that she's going to be the next AG.
She is great. Martha Coakley, in a couple of minutes, I'm dying to ask you about the changes that you've seen in the court system since you came in and were a DA in Middlesex County. But before that, we're going to get to the race itself. You know, the whole line after you came so close to beating Charlie Baker was that, well, okay, she didn't win, but she's totally redeemed herself because you were unfairly, I thought, raked across the coals in the Scott Baker situation. Scott Brown, whoops. So do you feel like, okay, I didn't win and that kind of stinks, but it was a much better campaign. It was much closer, and that matters.
Well, first of all, we did run a good campaign.
Yeah.
And I feel that we did come close. There are a lot of things that happened that we had no control over. And I said that. I would only get in this race if we had an opportunity in a longer race, not a special election like the last one in 2010, to put together a good ground game, to put together a team. And I feel like I did. Look, we had a very aggressive primary. We had the convention. We won. And then you had 7 weeks to kind of pull everybody together. And close, but not quite. And there's no silver medals in politics.
No,
right?
There aren't any silver medals.
What kind of, Martha, we know you pretty well through the radio. We don't know you that well. And through your professional work, we don't know you that well beyond that. How do you deal with losing? I mean, no, I'm serious. I mean, do you go home? You took criticism because you didn't concede that night. You can speak to that, too. You concede the next morning. When you go home and close your door and you're there, or the next day, or the next day, how do you deal with losing?
I have entered into a profession as a trial lawyer, for instance, where you try your best every case and you win some and you lose some. It doesn't mean that I really believe that this system only works on the political side and the adversary side. We're just talking about, you were talking earlier about, you know, the case. You need advocacy. You need people who are willing to take a position in a political race, in a trial, whatever, to present the case. In every race I've gotten into, I knew I could lose. I knew I could not. To be honest with you, we made a decision and Charlie Baker agreed. And I had all my supporters, most of my supporters were there the next morning to wait and make sure we counted every vote. Made a decision, game time decision. I still think it was the right one. So, you know, you have to do that. You do that every day. I do it as AG on cases I bring, cases I don't. I've talked a lot recently to folks about, you know, sometimes you get in trouble for what you do, sometimes you get in trouble for what you don't do. But in the end, if you have a clear idea what your mission is as AG, running for governor, you do your best. And
but are you that grown up? I mean, no, I'm serious.
Jim,
are you saying you're not a loser?
Jim can't understand
Jim
how you could be functioning. That's what the deal is.
No,
because you would not be functioning. Jim would be under a rock somewhere.
I don't take losses. I mean, everybody's – I don't know if I ever told you this story. I know I've told Marjorie this story. I interviewed Al Gore and his wife. His former wife, about 6 months or something after he had, maybe it was longer, 2 years after he'd lost the race. And I said, Mr. Vice President, so do you wake up, and obviously a little different situation, do you wake up every day saying to yourself, I was this close to being the leader of the free world? And he says to me without missing a beat, I haven't thought of it once. And I'm saying, what? I mean, please. So is that you? It's sort of, I did my best, I lost, I'm moving on. Is that where you –
we've talked a little bit about this. I mean, I've been in public service because of the work, right? I am late to politics. I ran for DA. I became a politician and had to – because that's how you got that job. Yeah. I've always been more focused on what's the work? What can I do? And I really believe I could have been not just a good governor but a great governor. And so I put my heart and soul into it. I feel we did our best. You keep moving, and we've been saying thanks to folks who worked so hard. People really went to bat and worked hard. And I said, look, even the day after I went to the supermarket, I said we didn't have any food in the refrigerator, so we had to go shopping. But I got stopped in the supermarket, hugged by people I never met, saying thank you for running. I voted for you. Or some people who didn't vote for me said I voted for Charlie Baker, but you ran a great race. And you know who wins? Massachusetts wins. People in Massachusetts win when you have two good candidates.
I want to ask you one last question about that, and then we can move on. One of the things that you were on my television show a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I was.
The guest to follow you was the mayor. What was she the mayor of? What was the
Gloucester.
Gloucester.
Mayor Kirk.
Mayor Carolyn Kirk. She's the Democrat who supported Charlie Baker. You're done. She's coming into my studio, and I'm going to myself, oh, my God, this is going to be a disaster. You know, the first time, it was the first time you had seen her since the election, Democrat endorsed Baker.
Once again, you were wrong,
Tim. The two of you hugged, and you didn't just hug. You hugged for an extended period of time.
Well, it wasn't that long.
Well, I'm serious. What was that about?
Hey, I had had a long chat with her about supporting me, and we had had a long discussion about what she felt she wanted to do for her city. I have been very much involved with what's been happening up in Gloucester with the fishing issues. It's a tough place, and I don't agree with her decision, but I believe she was trying to do what she felt was best for her and for her city. You just can't worry about too much of this. You go ahead, you stand on the merits, and, you have trouble projecting, I think. You had one race. You won it. You never ran again, so it's hard for
you to imagine.
You're
talking about my Cambridge City Council?
Yes, you were successful,
that
right?
That was incredible.
But, been there,
laughed,
done that.
I
you
cried.
Never you never put your hat in the ring again.
We're talking with Attorney General Martha Coakley. Martha Coakley, I want to take a trip down memory lane here a little bit, because I think people forget in many ways how far we've come in Massachusetts. Yeah. You had a lot to do with that. How old were you when you first an assistant district attorney in Middlesex County?
I was out of law school about 7 years, and so it was 1986 when I went as a ground assistant district attorney. I started up in the Lowell District Court, basically.
How much were you making?
Many women there?
There were already. Scott Hershberger had a lot of diversity in that class, actually. Sharon Hansen and Carmen Ortiz was, a few ahead of me, the current U.S. attorney. Sure. We had a lot of women in the office, supervisors at all level, who were good trial lawyers and who that was, Ricky Kleeman had been there before us, and a lot of women had come in, I think, partly because salaries were low and women were coming out of law school.
How low were they?
I think people started at about $16,000 or $17,000.
Wow.
It's not that
That's
much better.
No, but actually, I had started at a private firm when I first got out of law school in 1979. It wasn't a big, big white shoe firm, but my starting salary was $17,500.
Wow.
I thought I was rich.
86, did you say?
No, 1979.
But when did you become a DA?
My first job. I went in 86.
Okay. So in 1986, I know that when you you started the first child abuse unit in the Middlesex County District Attorney's
Well, I know. I remember office. I inherited a child abuse unit that
had
begun.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you started it.
No, Larry Hardoon, after the Fells Acre case, said we need to do a child abuse unit. So to give credit where it's due, that's when we started doing the videotapes and making sure that we had forensic interviewers after all the concerns about children's testimony. And I think Larry, to his credit, had a brilliant but simple idea. Let's get forensically appropriate interviewers. Let's make sure we don't do suggestive questioning. And let's videotape it. So you're just talking a lot about having things on tape, right?
Yeah.
You remove a lot of questions about how the interview was conducted, whether the questioning was suggestive. And it made a huge difference because so many of those cases then entered into pleas because the defense counsel could take that tape to his client and say, look at this, and not be in denial anymore. By the same token, we were able to see clearly if kids weren't competent or weren't consistent, and then we didn't bring those
cases. By the way, since you brought it up, you've taken endless flack for years about the Fells Acre case, people saying that that was an unjust prosecution.
Not my case. I mean, I had not prosecuted that. That was done under the prior a DA, but those appeals, as they do, cases I tried have come up on appeal under current DAs. They are the cases of the office. As I've said, look, I'm a steward of the Attorney General's office. There will be AGs before me and after me. We have particular responsibilities and duties. And that is a case I looked at. It went before the Supreme Court several times. It went up to the First Circuit. It went before three governors. And they all agreed when they actually looked at all the evidence that the convictions were sound.
So, Martha Coakley, 28 years, I did the math, took me about 5 minutes since you were an ADA, young ADA, to now. What are the major differences that you sort of marvel at in the legal environment, in the world in which you've spent almost three decades?
As an ADA, then to district attorney, certainly time in the child abuse unit. I mean, I think we have modernized a lot of the ways we approach cases, including sexual assault cases. Doing multidisciplinary teams around child abuse is a huge, huge change.
What does that mean, multidisciplinary teams?
What we started to do in the child abuse unit that we now do across the state is not just have a police officer investigate a case and take a statement from a 3-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 14-year-old. We bring together the forensic interviewer. We bring in DSS or DCF now, and we make sure that we make the decision that's in the best interest of the child. Does this child need to be removed from the home? Can the case go forward? Can the case go to trial? And that is a difference. That's a huge difference in the way we approach. And actually, we extended that then to adult sexual assault victims as we tried to work with those who came forward sometimes many months after an assault had occurred. We took a broader view to understanding people who were victimized, what it meant to have to testify, that victims of all ages aren't always consistent with what they remember, particularly because of trauma. And so I think that's the single biggest change that really informs a lot of what's happened around the country around child abuse, sexual assault victims, as we are now dealing
domestic
with
violence.
Domestic violence
dramatically, too.
Yes, although those changes had started in the 70s. Remember, there was a time before restraining orders. And providing the increased supports through the statutes and for not-for-profits that would work with victims, not just through the case, but what happens once you leave the home, what happens down the road, what happens for the counseling that you need if you've been a domestic violence victim. And look, those issues are back in some respects, right? Sexual assault on campuses.
Well,
domestic violence are – because they're not problems that are ever solved. We can't solve it and then move on. We have to stay diligent.
As long as you mentioned sexual assaults on college campuses, this is one of the things Jim and I talk a lot about is, you know, the whole how do we handle these sexual assaults on college campuses? And there's, you know, disagreements among the schools, and some people think we should do the yes means yes as opposed to the no means no. I have often told my own kids, actually, that if something terrible happens, I would call 911 because I'd almost feel better with the cops and the multidisciplinary team than with my fellow administrators at a college that has a vested interest, no matter how honorable they try to be, in not being, you know, the rape capital of America.
Or not honorable. Jimmy Carter was with us a couple of weeks ago and said that when his book about sexual and violence against women around the world, one of the examples he chose was how college administrators are more concerned about protecting their own institution than they were protecting the women. I know that's
exactly
a broad statement. In their schools. Where are you on that?
Well, I think, first of all, I realize that we need to do better at all of our college campuses, state schools and not-for-profits, because you are in loco parentis for, you know, the alleged defendants, but also for the victims. And you do have a system where if you don't have something that's clear-cut, that you don't have advocacy, you don't have ways to make sure there's a fair system, then you're going to get into trouble. What concerns me is the assumption that, you know, how old are you when you're a freshman in college?
18
years
yeah.
old. A lot of 18-year-olds, men and women, come to college surprisingly naive. And I mean, you say that now, Marjorie, but what parents say to their students as they're dropping them off in September, oh, by the way, keep 911 in case you're sexually assaulted. I still think as a country, we do not educate both our boys and girls about what it means to say yes or no, what it means about this, and we expect kids to have more knowledge and judgment than they do. And so then we don't address it. Schools don't address it. You know, I was in the first class at Williams and of women to go through all 4 years, and I realized I got there. We had no guide to health and sex on campus, and I worked on that with a friend to say women need to understand, you know, health issues, what their rights are, what has to happen. But we haven't done that work yet.
Before we talk about what you're doing currently, because now that I know you're here till January 20th, I want to make sure you earn your living, Martha Coakley, for the next – I thought you were leaving like today or something. What are the one or two things when you look back as AG that you feel, I really did this right? I feel great about this.
Well, let me say two. I mean, one, I think we led all the states in challenging Wall Street and getting money back. But what I'm really proud of is not only did we get that money back, we put it to work and we established our home core that today is working, making sure that if we can keep people in their homes, we do.
Didn't something just happen in the last week or two? Or
Freddie Mac.
Yeah, we've gotten a little glimmer of some progress from a federal agency that's been really stubborn about using what's proven to reduce, mortgages, to modify loans, to keep people in their homes. So we had sued them. The case was dismissed for jurisdictional issues. But in the meantime, Mel Watt, who's the director, has made some changes. We issued another letter today saying, okay, good first step, but let's keep moving because you will continue to provide for a big portfolio of people whose mortgages are being held by Fannie and Freddie still to keep them in their home. And it's a huge, huge issue.
And the second thing I'm assuming is the Defense of Marriage Act.
I'm really proud that our office with Mary Bonanno and GLAAD, we worked together on that. She on behalf of individual plaintiffs, couples, and the state were able to say and lay the groundwork at the federal court. Maura Healey argued that case in the federal court and the First Circuit. And although our case was not the one that went to the Supreme Court, I went to that argument. They took a case out of the Second Circuit. It was about taxes, and it was about, a brave woman who brought the suit. But underlying a lot of the questions, and I think the decision was the work we had done in Massachusetts with all the amicus briefs from businesses, from our state saying, hey, our state has decided we're going to let people marry who they want. Who are you, federal government, to say no?
We're talking with Attorney General Martha Coakley. Martha Coakley, Jim and I have talked about this a lot, too, over the years, and it's changed somewhat because Elizabeth Warren was elected to the Senate, and we, Suzanne Bump, state auditor statewide, you, of course, the Attorney General. But really, for a progressive state like Massachusetts, we have been really slow to get to elect many women statewide.
We have a new treasurer, Deb Goldberg.
We do have a new treasurer. That's right. But, I mean, it's 2014. Other states are so far ahead of us. You ever given any thought to what it is about Massachusetts that's kind of kept us behind so many other states?
Well, I have
Arizona.
Said,
the whole state was women for at a certain time.
I look at New Hampshire.
Everybody was.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, look, Massachusetts is always a hotly contested contest. And look how many politicians have gone on to run for president from here. We've had a lot of Democratic domination, so that when there is an open seat, there's a lot of competition for it. And, I don't have a specific answer to it, but I do think it's gotten better. Look, we had two women running in the Democratic primary. That was a first.
Yeah.
And I won that primary. I won the Democratic nomination. We have now four – we have Karen Pulido as the lieutenant governor, and Maura, Deborah Goldberg, and Suzanne Bump. So that's progress.
So you think the dark days are over? Is that what you think?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, once again, a glimmer of light.
Okay.
And I'd like to think that we'll continue that, which is why I think it was so important for me to say, I'm glad I ran. I'm sorry I'm lost, but you gotta put your hat in the ring. You gotta get back in there and stay engaged. Otherwise, people won't run.
Speaking of dark days, you were one of the first people who spoke out public in terms of public officials about Bill Cosby, when these allegations arose. You wrote to, was the president of UMass or some leader in UMass. Why'd you decide to get involved in that thing?
It actually was a news article that highlighted that one or two places had severed their ties with him, but others had not. And I just thought, this is something. It's not about innocence or guilt, but there is now an issue that he has not spoken to publicly, has not answered, which is his right to do. But I felt that that for the universities of Massachusetts particularly, to have him as a face in a big century campaign, a big fundraising campaign, was not appropriate. So I voiced my opinion. And to his credit, he resigned from that. I saw he's also recently resigned from the board of Temple.
Which is where he went to school, right?
But, we have, through history, people who do great things and then not necessarily great things. He has done a lot contributing to education, paying for that. But he has to be, as I think we've seen in the church, we've seen in football, we've seen in academia. You also have to be judged on your behavior. You can't just get a pass because you're famous or you're rich or you're philanthropic. And so, I just felt that it was important that at least UMass consider whether this was an appropriate face spokesperson for the school.
We're talking with Martha Coakley, the Attorney General. There's been a big contretemps about the proposal to give people raises, constitutional officers to get pay raises. I don't think you'd be affected, would you?
I would not. No.
Okay, so you're the perfect person because it's no skin off your nose one way or the other. Do you think that the Attorney General should go from 130 to 175 grand? I believe that's what it is. Governor should go from 150 to 185, and the constitutional officer should get a big pay raise.
Well, what I said is I think those raises are too big. I'm not against the idea that somehow, some way, we have to have a mechanism to do this. Otherwise, look, I've been in for 8 years. I haven't had a raise. I didn't expect it. I don't care. But I feel that now is the time at least for them to consider it. It shouldn't be that big, and maybe it should be phased in over several years. But, it's up to the legislature. This is the issue we had with the gas tax, you know, and if they need to face it, then they need to face it at some stage. Look, there are a lot of people in the state who make a lot more than the governor or the attorney general, yep, including the district attorneys, including many of the heads of the
1,264 state employees, according to Ira Jackson's report, make more than the governor.
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know what the DAs make. What do they make?
$171,000.
Okay. Meanwhile, the assistant district attorneys, I mean, I don't know how you're going to get any assistant district attorneys in the future if they come out of college and law school up to their eye teeth in debt. What is the starting salary for Middlesex County District Attorney now?
I think it's set by statute, and I'm not sure what it is. But the issue has not really been the starting salary. It's been what you're able to do for middle-level people. And I think the DAs have accommodated that. They have looked at, look, a lot of people want these jobs. They're great. They give you great experience. The real problem is year 4 or 5. How do you do retention? And to their credit, the legislature has given the DA some retention money. Those salaries have gotten up, and I know because I try once in a while to steal an assistant DA. And look, assistant AAGs don't make much money either. And those public salaries are always going to be below private. The question is, are they high enough to keep and retain the talent that we need to serve the government well?
Speaking of salaries, what are you doing next? Don't say, I have no idea. Is that what you're going to say?
I'm not going to say I have no idea. I have too many ideas.
Well, give us a few.
There's a lot of things I'd like to do. Look, I've loved teaching. You know, I've done teaching as a DA and as an assistant. Not less so as attorney general, just because of time. I'm interested in education and training, so there's that. I loved practicing law. I learned a lot from doing defense work and working at a big firm. So, you know, I've done every kind of practice. I've done white collar, I've done prosecution, I've done defense work before. So that's obviously an option. There are a lot of things I still care about on the not-for-profit side, looking at what we do about mental health and addiction issues, what we do about women at the table, what we do about minimum wage, what do we do about issues around child care and evening the playing field for women to get to the table, get to the bench, get to a medical career, get to make an earning, a living wage. And so how I channel what I do, I'm still thinking about what I do, but I know that I want to do something that's challenging, interesting, where I can still stay engaged. I'm not going anywhere.
So, Martha Coley, when you look at the cases either that you supervise as the district attorney.
You're
going to
let her off for that, by the way? That's the end of that whole,
well,
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, I told Jim, duck tour.
You want to pursue what you're
going
to do?
No, I'm going to go.
The cases that you either supervise as the district attorney or tried as a prosecutor, it must be a few cases that have really stood out in your mind over the years.
Well, certainly everybody remembers, Maddie Eapen's death at the hands of Louise Woodward. That one was the beginning of worldwide television of court. And we had court TV for a long time in Middlesex. So we did a bunch of cases that people were aware of.
Before you move off this case, one of the things I thought was so striking about this case, if people don't remember, this was a case of a nanny that was beat this child, this 8-month-old little baby, to death. The mother was a physician, or she still is a physician, who was working 3 days a week. And what struck me about that case is that the mother was on trial, basically, for working 3 days a week, even though she didn't work a full schedule, instead of the nanny who was – tell people what happened with that.
Well, there were
a
lot of issues. You know, she was British. She was in Boston. You know, Dr. Eapen people assumed they were these wealthy, wealthy doctors.
They weren't.
They'd come from fairly middle class. She was from Chicago. He was from India.
Lived right in the middle of Route 9, practically.
And, and so there are all these cultural and other issues that we tried to keep our eye on the ball in terms of, you know, did she shake and hit this child's head, which the jury did find. You know, remember they convicted her of second-degree murder. And the judge reduced it to manslaughter, which said she was responsible for his death. That's what I was at least pleased about. The judge then sent her off to England. But it did bring all of those issues about working mothers.
Yes.
Who does this? And which was totally unfair, by the way.
Totally unfair.
Totally unfair to Debbie Eapen, to that family. And You know, she has, to her credit, done an enormous amount of work on educating doctors and first responders around shaken baby and the risks for young parents, particularly when kids cry, too. So,
you have any grudges against anybody?
Not that I'm going to tell you.
Oh, good.
Not that I remembered today.
Take the Attorney General out for cocktail, Jim. Maybe she'll tell you.
No, I know there have to be some. You're just too grown up and too nice. Martha Coakley, it's been a pleasure dealing with you all these years, and we hope you're not a stranger. It sounds like you won't be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have done a great job as Attorney General.
Yes, I have to say, I've loved the job. It's been interesting. The best part, of course, is bringing smart young people in to do government work. And I say, this is good enough for government work. I say, are you good enough to do this important work around healthcare? Mm-hmm. We changed the landscape in healthcare here. Energy issues, human trafficking. We got the statute passed, which is a huge issue that I learned. I've seen these kids come into the child abuse unit who had been trafficked and started to say, gee, this doesn't seem right. Bullying, the kinds of things we've been able to do, speaking up for people who can't speak for themselves. So I'm proud of that. I know Maura Healey's going to continue that. And whatever I do, I will build on what I've done in the past.
Well, since you wouldn't say it, even though I gave you every opportunity, I will. The changes in the way women are treated in the court and children are treated in court from the time I began as a reporter and you began in the 80s till now, people forget, are night and day. That doesn't mean we still don't have a long way to go, but it is dramatically different from what it was when judges could dismiss children and dismiss women that were beaten.
Part of it is women judges, too. I've said that. You know, women in probate court, women on the bench in criminal courts have a different appreciation for an understanding of what it means to be a victim. And that's been important. Women doctors have changed the way we do a lot of medical research.
Yeah, so things have changed for the good.
We'll keep it changing.
Thanks for coming in. And you'll call me as soon as you have a job, right?
I will.
Let me know what it is.
I will.
And you take her out for a drink and you get
fine.
Final about all the
Martha Coakley, good luck. It's really great to
Attorney
see you.
Attorney General Martha Coakley, thank you very much for coming in. Coming up, Mark Wahlberg is asking the state for redemption, but should he first atone for his sins? We're going to ask you next with the reverence. Actually, not you. We're going to ask the reverence, and then maybe we'll ask you later. Stay tuned for 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.